Major funding for the connection is provided by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be. Available on the web at www.macromedia.com.
I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. In the constantly shifting ground that underlies United Nations diplomacy, the Bush administration now says that Saddam Hussein can stay. Colin Powell did the circuit of Sunday television talk shows to say that the focus of the U.S. campaign against Iraq is disarmament, rather than the earlier line that it requires changing the Ba'athist regime.
If Saddam disarmed entirely and satisfied the international community, that, in effect, would be a change in attitude, a change in the way the regime is looking at its situation in the world. We think the Iraqi people would be a lot better off with a different leader, a different regime. But the major issue before us is disarmament.
Some will mark it up as a victory for the French, for the Russians, for their determination to redirect the Americans from the course of war. But it's also true that this is the week in which the final diplomatic bids may be called, and Powell's soft stand could signal scheme change more than the real movement on regime change. Connection listeners, has the Bush administration altered its plan? Have the pleadings and pressure from other nations caused a slowdown in the much vaunted march on Iraq? Does the rest of the world matter? Our number is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. With us today, Patrick Jarreau. He is the Washington bureau chief for the major French daily paper Le Monde from Moscow, the editor of Journal, Masha Lipman, and in New York, a former U.S. ambassador to the U.N. Security Council, currently the vice president of the International Crisis Group, Nancy Soderberg. Thanks to all of you for being here. I'm going to begin, if I can, with Patrick Jarreau, because, Patrick, I heard over the weekend that French President Jacques Chirac was looking at the wording of the latest resolution. What's his main concern?
Well, I think the main concern, well, there are two of them. The first one is to make sure that in this confrontation with Iraq, all countries, and first of all the U.S., is going by the United Nations rules and patterns, and not acting unilaterally. I think the second concern for the French government is to make the best of their position in the UN Security Council as a permanent member with a veto, a right of veto, and demonstrating that they have a say and that they can use their position in an efficient way.
Do the French see themselves as carrying the argument for multilateralism in this particular case?
Well, certainly, you know, it was already the case 12 years ago with the former President Bush. At the time of the Gulf War, the French had said from the beginning that they would be ready to help and to be part of the coalition against Iraq after Iraq invaded Kuwait, but that everything had to be decided through the UN. And I think it's still the same stake now. It's the question of what kind of international order, and do we want big powers to do just what they want because they are big powers, or do we want to make progress in a kind of consultation and discussion throughout the world and respecting the rights of every country.
So if the word of the week is compromise, is that seen as a victory for those like the French and the Russians who have opposed the U.S. resolution?
Well, probably yes. I would say the French government is, in a way, inclined to present it as a victory. Meanwhile, President Chirac, who was at the summit of the French-speaking countries in Beirut this weekend, didn't sound too triumphant, but they are doing, they are going their way, and their way is to say that, of course, they succeeded. In a way, to a certain extent, it can be seen as a victory, not only for France, but again, you know, the point is very clear. In the Security Council, there was no majority to vote for the draft resolution by the resolution drafted by the U.S. and the U.K. That's all. So the U.S. had to recognize that and to try to find a way to get out from this problem for the U.S.
Masha Lipman, tell me about President Putin's position on this. Is he still a man who's very eager to be seen working with the United States?
Yes, he's seen this way, and he's been, I think, all these 5 weeks that negotiations have gone on, he's been, I think, wise on the issue. He's been fully in charge. He's made not too many statements, and those which he has made were, I would say, well-dosed, measured, and most importantly, few. And by making and by downplaying sort of the issue to the Russian public, to the domestic audience, I think he now, if he wants, he may portray this change in the U.S. position as a victory if he wants to, or he may keep as quiet as he was all this while. In any case, any concessions on the Russian part will not be as conspicuous as they would have been if he had been too vocal at the beginning, saying we will not allow this to happen.
So fair to say that this has more to do with Russian domestic politics than it does to do with Russia's position at the U.N.?
I think both, and I think all big powers these days regard take it very importantly, both domestically and regarding their position on the world scene. It is very important for President Putin on the domestic scene, not so much to the public, which has been largely indifferent to the issue, but to his political elite, among which there are lots of people who are very critical of not of President Putin personally, because he's way too popular for that, but critical of his policy of making too many concessions to the U.S., being too pro-Western in his course, especially since September 11. And I think quietly, even as they saw that the war in Iraq is inevitable, trying to urge President Putin to use it as a bargaining point.
But Patrick and Masha, it also has a lot to do with just standing up to the United States at this point in time, does it not?
Well, sure. I think it's important. Well, we all know that you know, there was the demonstrations of solidarity with the U.S. after 9/11, and then in the months which followed, there was a gap which widened between Europe and the U.S. And I think, of course, it's important for France, and I guess for Russia, for different reasons, to show that they are able to resist the will of the current U.S. administration.
Masha?
It's on the one hand, of course, President Putin's course is pro-Western and is to support the president of the U.S. and the United States as a country. But at the same time, it's always dangerous in Russia to come across as a leader who's secondary, who's once, after being a superpower, who is today a leader of the country which follows the American instructions. This is a double-edged sword, and it's always difficult to work out this policy.
Nancy Soderberg, take us to New York. Did France and Russia force a change in U.S. plans here?
Well, I think what happened is the Bush administration made a huge tactical error over the summer when it started talking about war as a first option. That position was so far to the right that even his father's advisors, Scowcroft and Eagleburger Baker, had to come in and sort of act like grown-ups, push them more to the center. You had a huge reaction in Congress. And the broader community at the United Nations said, no, 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 we're not going that. They forced a 180-degree change from the rhetoric of last spring. And now they're talking about war as a last option. What we're really talking about is disarmament, not regime change. They no longer talk about democracy because they realized that democracy in Iraq means that the Shias who are aligned with Iran would take office. So there was a
very strong
international.
You're saying that the push was as much an American push for a change as it was the international one.
It was very strongly both, because they made a huge error. The French and the Russians at the Security Council rightly took the lead in trying to forge a consensus that could gain a unified position in Iraq. But I think one element that's missing from my two colleagues' comments about the motives behind Russia and France is you also have to look at the enormous economic interests that both Russia and France have with the regime of Saddam Hussein. The Russians in particular have an $8 billion in debt left over from arms sales from the war between Iraq and Iran a decade ago, and they've concluded between $40 and $60 billion worth of potential deals in the oil and transportation sectors. France are number two trading partners. They've got a substantial number of contracts as well. So they very much want to protect their own economic interest in this as well. So it's all not high principles. It's direct self-interest as well. But what's interesting is the international community reacted. The U.S. domestic constituencies, Congress reacted. And I think the result actually may come out the best of all possible worlds, and that you'll have a strong threat of action if the Iraqis don't abide. And the hope is that they actually may well now see a unified world for finally coming to grips with their responsibilities under the Security Council resolutions and let the inspectors do their job. That's the hope.
Masha, what about the money? Is that a large part of it?
I think this is a large part of it, and all the issues that have just been listed, the big debt of Iraq to Russia, and an important chunk of oil for food program that Russia accounts for, and huge investments of Russian oil companies, private oil companies, all these counts. And all of these have influenced President Putin's position. But I think what made his position easier was that he was not in that alone among the big powers of the world. It made his position a lot more, it made it for him a lot more easy that France was not supporting the U.S. position, and in fact only one country was, and that was Britain. So this way he found himself not only under pressure domestically, but also he found himself in a very respected company. And also he knew, like other leaders of the world knew, that inside the American administration there was dispute. And all of this made him look not just trying to play this complicated game, withstanding the pressure inside or conceding the pressure inside and trying to look dignified abroad, but he was doing what basically all other countries except U.S. and Britain were doing.
Patrick Jarreau, we have to break in about a minute's time, but just give me your sense of Nancy's reference to the fact that money's a big part of the push here.
Well, probably oil is a big part of the problem for the U.S. You know, I'm not sure of that, unless the U.S. say that their intention, its intention is, for instance, with a new regime in Baghdad to cut the deals which have been made with, for instance, French oil companies. So if the U.S. is saying that they want to control all the oil in Iraq and to deprive, for instance, French companies from their rights, then it will become an issue. But I don't think the U.S. said that.
Connection listeners, our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. This hour leads a week in which a resolution is likely to be passed at the United Nations. And we're talking about the wording on that, how we got there, and what it means for shifts and changes, both at the United Nations and in the influence over the USA's original plan for an extremely tough move. My name's Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR. My name's Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. Our number's 1-800-423-TALK. And this hour about the United Nations likelihood of a resolution passing this week which will call for much tougher weapons inspections in Iraq and what the longer-term implications of that resolution will be. And with us on the program today, Patrick Charot. He is Washington Bureau Chief for the French daily newspaper Le Monde. Masha Lipman is deputy editor of the Russian weekly news magazine Journal. You will recognize her name from her work through the early 90s with the Washington Post out of Moscow. And Nancy Soderbergh's with us. She's vice president of the International Crisis Group and former U.S. ambassador to the U.N. Security Council. So, Nancy, is it done? I mean, we listened to all the sort of careful diplomatic talk over the weekend, but is this thing going to pass this week?
I think it will, whether it'll be this week or within the next 10 days. You have to remember the words UN and quick do not ever go together. So there's always something that comes up at the last minute. But I think the U.S. has moved toward where the majority of the UN Security Council is, which is a tough inspections regime, but not a blanket authorization of the use of force. And the wonderful thing about UN diplomacy is it can be worded vaguely enough so that all sides can claim victory and move on. And I think that's what will happen. Then the tough work begins. The hard part here is whether the inspectors really will be led into Iraq. This, again, will take many months. There's a tight window of the winter months that ends in February that the administration would prefer to do war then because it's a lot more pleasant from a temperature standpoint. You can avoid the sandstorms. And I don't think they're going to meet that timetable, my sense. They'll get in within the next month or so, and then they'll need a good 2 months to evaluate the work. And the tough decision will be when they're denied access to a site, probably a presidential site. What do they do then? Do they go ahead and overthrow the regime, or do they take military action to wipe out that particular palace? And my guess is they'll have a roving, robust inspections regime that militarily takes out any sites of concern rather than a regime change. But it's going to be very interesting to see how this plays out.
Our number is 1-800-423-8255. Let's start in Louisville, Kentucky. Ted's on the line. Hi, Ted.
Hello, how are you?
Fine, thanks for calling.
Good. I just want to say initially this morning the news, I guess it caught me off guard. It seemed like the switch from the previously stated unilateral position to more of a globally conscious, seemingly multilateral position. I thought it was fairly interesting and intrigued me, but to what extent do you think we can actually take this seriously?
I'm going to ask Patrick to join us on that as the Washington correspondent. Patrick, when you hear Colin Powell saying maybe not regime change, maybe just disarmament, is that the straight goods from the administration?
Well, I think it's a rhetorical device, you know, to say, if Saddam could comply with everything that the UN and the U.S. are asking from him, it would amount to a regime change, because the regime, of course, would be different in Baghdad. So I don't think we have to make much out of that. But the important point is that as Nancy said, when you look over what happened during the last months, the U.S. started from a very aggressive and unilateral stand, and at stake was the idea that, you know, you can bypass the UN. Not only you don't need the UN, but you must ignore the UN. And finally, today, the U.S. is negotiating in the UN and making concessions, as you have to do in any negotiation, and trying to find a middle of the road way, which accommodates all the members of the Security Council. So I think that it has been a very interesting evolution from the part of this administration.
I think the callers.
Masha
Go ahead, Masha.
Excuse me. I think there is a way to look at it, to look at this change of language seriously and at the same time a little bit cynically, as I think all diplomacy is cynical. There will still be war, which in my opinion is not a good idea, and it is very clear to everyone that there will be a war regardless of what the inspectors sign in Iraq, and that the U.S. will be looking for a pretext to call how Iraq is responding non-compliance. On the other hand, I think it's much better this way than it was originally when America was prepared to act unilaterally. What made, I think, this compromise easier was that, in fact, all the countries, all the members of the Security Council were seeking consensus. I think the matter is too serious for the countries of the world, for the most important countries of the world, to afford to have an open public discord about it. And because all parties were seeking consensus, they sort of reached it. And as soon as America made this change, made this concession that allowed the countries such as France and Russia to have a face-saving situation, they, I think, opted for it. They haven't yet, but I think they will soon.
Mm-hmm. Nancy?
Well, I think to answer the caller's question, this is very serious. I would disagree with Masha that this is not a cynical ploy, nor is war inevitable. I think the real world has descended on the Bush administration. They've realized that it's not that easy just to wake up and decide to overthrow Saddam Hussein in power. So I think what you'll have is a very serious effort to bring about compliance with Saddam Hussein. I think the fact that the Bush administration went to the UN, got consulted with Congress, got a resolution from Congress is all a good thing. But there should be no doubt that in the end, the U.S. will act alone if it believes there is a threat from Saddam Hussein that is not being addressed. And it's important to also look at the rest of the world. You have the war on terrorism that they're going to have to continue to address. You don't hear much about that anymore, but that will continually pop up. And you have, most interestingly, a parallel dynamic going on in North Korea, where you have the leader there, who the world thinks is one of the more bizarre characters on Earth, admitting that he has been violating the commitments under the 1994 agreements and has been trying to seek a uranium-based nuclear weapon. Now, you've got Iraq that says, well, we might have one in 1 to 5 years if we can get the right kind of fission material, where you have North Korea says, well, no, we've been doing it, and we probably have a couple of these bombs right now. And the contrast between they're going to have to negotiate in North Korea, I don't think anyone believes they're going to go to war over this issue, so they'll end up negotiating it. And the contrast of these two dueling efforts to contain weapons of mass destruction will feed into each other, and I think force the Bush administration to act responsibly in both cases.
Patrick, is that one reason why, for example, through in the eyes of Europeans, maybe the Bush administration is more willing to bend on the Iraq issue because the war on terror is not dropping away from the headlines, witness Indonesia, and that the recent attention from or on North Korea?
Well, I think it's certainly part of it. I mean, at the start of this new Iraq cycle, at the beginning of September, I think it was former President Clinton who advised President Bush not to make Iraq a priority, given that Al Qaeda was still there and that the main leaders of Al Qaeda had not been found nor arrested, and that there was still that danger. And Vice President Gore made the same case in San Francisco. So I think there are many Americans who think that maybe the order of priorities set by the administration is not the good one. And what happened, of course, in Indonesia and in Yemen and in Kuwait shows that the danger of Al Qaeda, as George Tenet, the director of CIA, said last week, is very important. And now you have this North Korean story, which tends to prove that the danger again is maybe hotter in that part of the world than it is in Iraq. So probably it had something to do with the will of the administration to compromise.
Our number is 1-800-423-8255. Ted, thanks for your call. We're going to Winchester, Massachusetts now. Michelle's joining us. Hi, Michelle.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, thank you.
I'm glad that you guys are having this program. It's very informative. And I want to say, as an American, I've been doing a lot of protesting and leafleting people to get them involved in protesting a unilateral preemptive strike. And I find, as an American, that I don't trust Bush. I feel like he is saying one thing and he's going to do another, that we will go to war.
So let me ask you, Michelle, when the Secretary of State says maybe regime change is not the appropriate move, are you saying that you don't believe that either?
Well, I just feel like, I guess what I'm trying to say is I feel like Bush has been so aggressive and so determined to have his own way that he doesn't seem to be listening to the protesters or the people who are calling and protesting and saying, you know, we believe in inspection, we believe in being multinational, working with our allies, and I don't trust Bush.
Why not, though, give yourself some credit for being part of people who may, in fact, have changed some of the minds at the administration? If, as Nancy's saying, the approach is a great deal less aggressive now than it was 6 weeks ago.
Well, I think it's to the credit of the international community. I honestly don't think he's been listening to the American people. And I worry that we are being labeled, because of Bush, as aggressive as he is and just as bullish as he is. And that concerns me. And I know a lot of people that I talk to are not interested in unilateral preemptive strikes. But we all don't like Bush, and we all didn't vote for him, and we can't wait till he's out of office.
Nancy, join us again on this, because you were saying that you don't think war is inevitable, but a lot of people are saying that, you know, this is, they're just taking one step sideways before they take the next step forward.
Well, I think Michelle is selling herself very short. I think the letters, the protests, the American people are speaking up. And if you look at what happened with the Bush administration's tactics on this before they took this to Congress and after, it's a dramatic shift, which is the members of Congress reflecting Michelle's and other constituents' view on the right way to go forward. I think they did listen. It may have been unwillingly, but they did actually listen. And my own sister's been doing exactly what you're doing, Michelle, and I think she's gotten all of her friends to do it. She lives in California, and I have friends all over the country that are reacting similar to this and standing up, and I think they have forced him to listen to this. And I think if you compare what they're saying now with last summer, it's a dramatic shift. I think there is a division in the administration. I think there are those who would like to do this for political reasons. But I think cooler heads are prevailing, and it's not just the international community. So keep speaking up, Michelle. Don't give up. It is working.
Yes, I agree with what Nancy is saying. I think that the speech delivered by President Bush on the 7th of October in Cincinnati is exactly the proof that if the mainstream media in the U.S. seem to underestimate the importance of the opposition to this war, the White House doesn't underestimate it.
Michelle, thanks for your call. We're at 1-800-423-8255 to Cambridge, Massachusetts now, and Riz is on the line. Hi, Riz.
Yes, hi. I just wanted to make the comment that Colin Powell has been out front a couple of times before regarding international cooperation, most particularly with the Middle East, and he's been kind of left flapping in the wind more than once by the administration. And I'm just wondering if this isn't another example where he's taking a more progressive position with the rest of the world, but the hardliners and the view of the administration hasn't really changed much at all.
Masha Lipman, give us the perspective from Moscow in terms of who speaks for America. In answer to Riz's question, you know, is when Colin Powell speaks, is that the voice of America?
I don't think that the general public or even the political elite makes a difference of who is speaking this time. Is it Colin Powell or the President of the United States? The general attitude to what comes from America is that of apprehension and not too much sympathy. However, it helps Putin in his pro-Western course that the public is generally apathetic. And if these sentiments are certainly here in Russia, there was of criticism and lack of trust and certainly the dislike of the aggressive and unilateral course. The public does not have a big say in how decisions are taken, quite unlike, I think, the United States, where people like Michelle, I think, influence what the newspapers write about, and then what the newspapers write about influence how the political elite acts. So this makes it easier for President Putin to adhere to his course that he took quite a while ago, actually over a year ago, right after September 11, and he's adhered to this course regardless of the public opinion.
You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. Nancy, Patrick, does Colin Powell speak for America here?
Well, he has to think about resigning on a regular basis. He's been undercut by the conservatives sort of in the White House with and Rumsfeld repeatedly. But he's a good soldier, and I think he'll stick with the team and, you know, follow orders. But I think on the issue of Iraq, he is actually prevailing. And I think that the mood in Washington has pervaded the White House to not rush to war. There's too many other considerations to weigh there, and they frankly have not made the case on the overwhelming threat. So I do think on this one he is speaking for the administration. Had he made these comments last summer, I wouldn't have said that. But I think over time they have shifted, and you now have the president finally speaking as well, and he is saying the same thing that Colin Powell is. So I think in this instance, despite the many times he's been undercut by his colleagues, he is speaking for the administration.
I must say, I'm amazed by the level of spin, you know, about that in Washington. I mean, I heard the White House spokesman, Larry Fleischer, asked the question, you know, is it regime change or disarmament? And he just answered, oh, well, in Congress, it's regime change, and in the UN, it's disarmament. And so, you know...
like it's the same thing.
And by the way, it'd be cheaper to put a bullet in his head. I mean, that was one of the more bizarre comments.
So, you know, obviously, this administration is taking care of its TAF or right-wing electorate and pretending that they are not, giving away anything. But at the same time, they are negotiating, and I think that the Powell's policy is prevailing. Yes.
But European leaders, European nations, have to make their decisions on how to respond to the United States when there is a contradictory line coming out from Rumsfeld and Cheney at one end and Powell at the other. And how do the Europeans make that decision?
Well, I think that, you know, the interesting point is that the Europeans are divided as well, and sometimes inside governments, if you see what's happening for the British government, or, you know, a large part of the Labour Party doesn't agree with the policy of Tony Blair on Iraq. So they have their divisions too, and part of these governments would be ready to go with the U.S. in any case. This is what the Spaniards said, what the Italians say, and what the Brits to a certain extent say. And other governments are really trying to pull the U.S. in the other direction. So. Well, for the time being, this effort made by mainly the French, but with a kind of backing from Germany, succeeded. But it could go the other way.
I have to interrupt you there. We're taking a short break. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. Connection listeners, this is the week that the United Nations is most likely to pass its resolutions calling for tougher weapons inspections. The shifts, the changes, the compromises in those resolutions. How do you see those? To whom do you attribute those? My name's Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR.
Funding for The Connection is provided by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be. Available on the web at www.macromedia.com.
From Boston,
you're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. My name's Dick Gordon. This hour, a conversation about the likelihood that this will be the week that the UN passes a resolution calling for tougher weapons inspections in Iraq. The Russians, the French, claiming that their diplomatic efforts have brought the U.S. back from its more aggressive wording on a resolution. But where are we now and where are we going from here? Our number is 1-800-423-8255. Let's start in Medford, Massachusetts. Dave's on the line. Hi, Dave.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I'd just like to ask if any of your guests suspect that the Bush administration's belligerent tone over the past year has been largely intended to get us more or less where we are today, with the international community really taking the Iraq issue seriously and realizing that something has to be done now, and whether or not, you know, if we hadn't taken this posture, what would we be at this juncture?
No, it's a good question. Nancy?
Well, I think the fact that the Bush administration is raising Saddam Hussein's weapons of mass destruction program is a good thing. I think the way they've done about it has damaged America's credibility in the world. And for the last few months, as we've been talking on this program, they've shifted to a much more responsible manner. But I think...
Can I stop you for just half a sec, though, Nancy? I think what Dave is saying is if the Bush administration hadn't come out with its big boots on saying, we must act, we've got to do something now, that we wouldn't be at this stage.
Exactly.
Right. I think... as I said, I mean, I think the fact that they're raising it is a good thing. The way they did it was wrong. But people forget what's been going on in Iraq for the last decade. We have had a robust enforcement of these regimes. Almost every week, American pilots are flying over Iraq, no-fly zones, bombing Iraq. We have a robust regime. So I think even if Gore had won the election, or some say he did, but if Gore were president today, I think you'd see very much the same tactic of trying to get the UN inspectors back in there, perhaps not with the belligerence that the Bush administration started out. But Iraq has been on the front burner of the president of the United States for the last 10 years. So I think you'd have had this come up regardless. I think tactics of the Bush administration are somewhat suspect.
Okay, well, excuse me. We get the UN inspectors back in there, but what's to prevent it from returning to the way it was several years ago, over and over again, where the Iraqis, kick the inspectors out whenever they get too close to something? I mean that's been the problem in the past.
What's likely to happen this time, the last time the inspectors were in was in 1998. The U.S. pulled them out because they were playing a game of cat and mouse with Iraq and they were not able to do their job. So the U.S. pulled them out and we instituted a military campaign called Desert Fox, which went in and took out the sites of concern. And I think what you'll have is either one of two options. The Iraqis will finally live up to their commitments and let the inspectors do their jobs, or you'll have a repeat of Desert Fox on a more broad scale. The other option, of course, is to go in and take out Saddam. But my guess is you'll have a very robust bombing campaign to enforce the inspections, at least in the initial stages, if Saddam didn't do that. Now, people say, well, would Gore have done this? If Bush hadn't done this, where would we be today? I think the United States is threatened by Iraq and has been for the last 10 years. And so I think this would have been on the agenda, perhaps with a different tactical take one way or the other. But I think there's no doubt that America will continue to do this. And people forget we have been doing a robust bombing campaign in Iraq with American pilots side by side with British bombing Iraq almost weekly for the last 6 or 7 years.
Patrick, we had a couple of crossed wires. Are you back with us now?
Yes, I'm here.
So Patrick and Masha, is President Bush getting any credibility or any credit, I should say, overseas for refocusing the world on Iraq the way Dave's suggesting that perhaps he ought to?
Well, of course, obviously. I mean, he put Iraq on the general global agenda, I would say, and that's his merit, and undoubtedly. And it must be said that the previous administration, the Iraq expelled the inspectors in 1998, and the previous administration didn't do much about it. I mean, didn't do anything about it actually. And I think that it's always a little strange to hear, that there would be the UN on the one side and the US on the other side. I mean, US is part of the UN, is one of the permanent five, and had every possibility to do something if it had wanted to do so. So obviously there was a change in the stand of the US government after the election and with this administration, and this administration has been pushing this case and very efficiently, of course, with maybe not so good, not always so good arguments, but with a strong will.
Patrick, I have to correct you on one thing there, on your facts. You may have not heard what I said when your wires got crossed there, but in 98, it was not that the U.S. did nothing. And as I said, when Saddam Hussein last confronted the inspectors in 1998, the U.S. pulled them out and conducted a fairly robust military campaign called Desert Fox, where they went in and bombed the sites of concern. It was a very strong reaction to that in 1998, and I think that you'll see Bush do more or less the same thing the first time they're confronted again.
Let's move on if we can. Dave, thanks for your call, 1-800-423-8255 to Raleigh, North Carolina. Mark's on the line. Hi, Mark.
Hi, I just wanted to make a comment regarding some of the callers I've heard before say, they were concerned that the Bush administration is not listening to protest voices that call in, that write, that are active. But I just wanted to point out there's still, for every one of those, two or three of folks like me who are in support of the current action. And, we're also calling in and saying, hey, we absolutely support the action of dealing with Iraq instead of keeping our heads in the sand and letting them develop to the point where apparently North Korea is right now.
Mark, where are you on the issue of America's position at the United Nations with the apparent softening of the resolution? Do you think that this is a good thing?
Not at this point. I think it is good that we come out strong and eventually get to a position that is some form of compromise. And I think the past caller makes a good point of this. And Bush has done this in many, many instances during his very short presidency so far. He comes out strong on an issue, but then compromises, and everybody can be happy with some medium in between. However, I don't think at this time we need to soften up, because I think North Korea actually proves our point with Iraq, because if we don't do something with Iraq now, they'll just develop, and we'll have less bargaining power with them once they actually acquire nuclear technology.
You think there's going to be a war there, Mark?
With Iraq? Yeah, I do. I think all indications point in that direction at this time.
Let me turn to Masha Lipman in Moscow and ask whether or not in the coverage of U.S. moves in this direction, Masha, is there an understanding that there are different opinions in the United States? Or when people say the Bush administration is doing that, it's just assumed to be that the whole nation is behind him?
I think there is... very little of this in Russia, very few publications, very little on television about there being differences inside the American administration and, in fact, among the American people. And actually, in my publication, I'm going to compensate for this week. We are expecting what I think is going to be a good story about comics in America, television comics, because I think there is no idea in this country about what people laugh at on television to a huge audience. And we are also going to have some coverage of anti-war in Iraq movement in America. But we are a small publication with a small circulation, and of course we don't make a difference. In general, I think if you ask a person in the street what America is about, is it one on the Iraqi issue, or is it divided? I think the general answer will be they're all aggressive. I think this will be the general understanding of what goes on in America.
Thanks for that. Mark, thanks a lot for your call to Hamilton, Ontario now, and Sandro's joining us. Hi, Sandro.
Hello, everyone. Hello, Dick. My comment basically is in the long-term health of the United States, it would appear to me that the softening of the resolution.
Yeah.
At the United Nations may serve the long-term goals in terms of economy and expenditures on defense. And my reason for that is basically I think there will be a very large increase in terrorist activities locally and abroad by at least for the time being putting the brakes on the Bush administration's seemingly iron will to go in and do it on their own.
You got me a little lost here, Sandra, the link between the war on terror and Bush's plans for Iraq.
Okay. If there is an invasion or military action unilaterally or bilaterally, whether it's with us or with the British, in conjunction with the British, I think there will genuinely be, after that, there will be an increase in terrorism, such as we are currently witnessing in Bali, Southeast Asia, and so on and so forth. This is as the resentment grows towards the so-called crusaders or invaders, this activity will likely start to increase.
Sandra, let me take your point and ask Nancy Soderbergh if you know, the issue of terrorism and whether or not that's being lost is a part of the conversation at the United Nations.
Very much so. There was a strong feeling of unity at the United Nations after 9/11, and the member states really came together and supported the United States in a way that I think is unprecedented. They've worked very hard to implement the 12 conventions on terrorism, and the hard work of that needs to go on. It's not easy to get countries to open up their banking systems to try and give some of their information about some of their own nationals to the committee who might be problematic, to get countries to extradite them. So you need to have the United States continue to lead that. Now, I'm of the belief that the United States can do more than one thing at the same time. So the effort on Iraq is not inconsistent with continuing the war on terrorism. And even if we have to deal with North Korea at the same time, I believe the United States can can take all of those issues at the same time. But I think there is a concern that America may not continue to lead in the war on terrorism the way it needs to. Despite all the rhetoric, the world needs the United States to lead, and they want them to lead, and they want them to lead responsibly. So the more they get kind of diverted into a campaign against Iraq to overthrow Saddam Hussein makes them very nervous. If it's to try and get inspections, then they'll have the full support on both.
But all right, Sandro, thanks very much for your call. Patrick, in the debate, excuse me, just one little bit of network business first. This is The Connection from National Public Radio. Patrick, the UN ambassador from France, Jean-David Lafitte, said in the debate that beyond Iraq, this issue has everything to do with the international order. Is the translation of that that this has everything to do with every nation at the UN trying to give a message to the United States about how important it is to stay within that institution?
Well, just one point concerning the former question. I don't think that there is any connection between, you know, the fact that action against Iraq would be the U.S. alone or the U.S. with the Brits or multilateral action and Al-Qaeda. I don't think that Al-Qaeda is concerned with that, you know, and Al-Qaeda will probably perform terrorist actions in any case. Al-Qaeda is not defending the UN or the international law order. Then to your question, I think that, again, you know, the problem is what kind of leadership, as Nancy said, for the U.S., and I think that there is really a debate about that, even in the U.S., itself. The strongest democracy in the world leading, does it mean that it has to, you know, that it agrees to discuss with other democracies and try to make the case on everything it has to do? Or does it just mean that the U.S. goes its way, regardless of what other countries think, you know, with this idea, as we say in France, qui m'aime me suive, those who like me will follow me, and too bad for the others. Well, obviously, for obvious reasons, countries like the European countries, I guess Japan to a large extent, and Russia prefer, you know, the first option to the second. And I think this is one of the most important issues at stake in the current debate at the UN.
Patrick, thanks for being with us today. Patrick Géraud is Washington bureau chief for the French daily newspaper Le Monde. Masha Lipman, thank you for your time.
Pleasure.
Masha is deputy editor of the Russian weekly news magazine Journal, and Nancy Soderberg, nice to have you on the program again.
My pleasure.
Nancy is vice president of the International Crisis Group and a former deputy U.S. ambassador to the UN. Connection listeners, feel free to continue the conversation. Find us online at our website, theconnection.org. There are forum pages there for you. Graham Smith is our senior producer. My name is Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.
Funding for The Connection is provided by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be.
This is WBUR. Just ahead in the